We can totally do it. 7 months. Andrew, damn you. Damn you for selling me this.
Now we have our opening.
Building websites in my sleep, counting content types instead of counting sheep. Where my time's gone, I can't say. I just can't turn around and walk away. Just as I'm in my darkest hour, appears a module that holds all the power, but it has issues.
I'm Andrew Riley, and this is Drupal Easy Podcast 144, also known as 12 Squared. Today with us, we have our usual guests, and we have a special guest. So running down the list, how's it going, Mike?
It's going well, Mr. Riley. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, enjoying the Florida weather while the north has snowed in.
It was pretty spectacular this weekend, wasn't it?
It was. It was sunny in the low 70s. It was nice.
I actually chose to do yard work. I said, I need to get outside. I'm going to trim some trees.
Wow, it was so nice. You went and did yard work.
I needed to be outside.
And speaking of the north, how's it going, Ted?
Pretty good. I went sledding this morning. That's why I'm a bit late.
Did you take your dog sledding?
She didn't sled. She was there, but she wasn't sledding. It was part of the larger walk.
So was it just you and a sled? Like you went sledding by yourself?
No, it was our friend's kid and us and our friend's mom.
Is it a snow day?
It is a snow day.
So how much snow did you get?
Probably 12 inches already, and it's still going.
Yep. Sweet.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. Beautiful. It is very beautiful. All right, very no yard good. Work today, though. No yard work.
Well, maybe next weekend.
Yeah, once I can see the yard again.
And also, we have our special guest this week, Tess Flynn, also known as Socket Wench. How's it going, Tess?
Fine. I think the East Coast took all of our snow, though.
You didn't get any of it?
It was above freezing in January for like a week here. That doesn't happen in Minnesota.
But you didn't get any of that snow? Because I heard like Chicago got the big storm that I think is dumping on Ted right now.
We've barely gotten maybe a centimeter of snow in the last week or two. It's really kind of bizarre.
Could be the calm before the storm.
Hopefully. It's February. It's supposed to be the coldest month ever in Minnesota here.
There you go. Hey, look who just joined.
Hey.
Hey,
I don't have
Ryan
my piano.
Price.
It's over there. But I could have played myself a fanfare, I guess. I don't know if the piano is a good or a bad thing. Have you gotten any feedback on that one, Mike?
We have not gotten any feedback about the piano.
Okay, people, just let us know. Send us a tweet at Drupal Easy. Piano stays or burn the piano in the next bonfire.
But that was kind of a one-time thing. Right? Because we wanted to get through like a whole pile of stories and we had to limit ourselves.
Right. I think Ryan was implying that it wasn't going to be a one-time thing.
Oh, it's coming back. unless we... Actually, probably the more negative feedback we get, the more piano you will hear in all of the little transitions between the pieces.
Well, now you're going to affect the results, and I can't tell if people are going to be voting for it because they want it to disappear or against it because they want it to stay.
Look, when you climb the mountain of tiny toy pianos, it is a long and winding road.
Okay, well, Tess, welcome to the podcast.
The so, tiny Ryan. Toy piano, da, 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 da. Something about Drupal 8.
Great, now we're going to get worse. DMCA takedown notices.
Could be worse. We could replace all the little interlude music with clips from the movie Zardoz.
Oh, wow. Andrew, do you even get that reference?
No, I don't even know that movie.
Mike, put one on the board.
Holy cow. Someone just one-upped Andrew on a sci-fi reference.
Starring Sean Connery, in case you guys were wondering.
Wow. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Tess, congratulations. You're the new co-host of the Drupalese podcast.
Yeah. Oh, yay.
Andrew, bad news. Sorry.
I've been voted off the island.
Yep.
It was a battle to the death.
Let's talk flag module, because we've been talking about, you know, on and off, we've mentioned you, Tess. We've mentioned someone called Socket Wrench more times than I care to, you know, admit to.
You guys gave me my tagline now.
Yes, I saw that on your Twitter profile. It's Socket Wrench, not Socket Wrench. Mm-hmm. So let's start at the beginning. How did you've been involved in Drupal for a long time. So why don't you tell us, give us the elevator version of like, how did you get started with Drupal?
So I think it was around 2006 or 2007. It was right around when Drupal 4.7 was released. And I had just started working at a tech company. At the time, it was for a middleware monitoring company that no longer exists. So I didn't really need a tech project in my off time to keep my interest going, because I had plenty of that from work, which was very different from the previous year of working at a gas station right after I graduated. And I was working on a website content manager at that time, which never went anywhere. And I was looking at the situation of, there are features I want to develop, I still have a site that I want to do stuff with, but I don't have any time to really write a content manager. So someone suggested, well, you could try WordPress or some of these other content managers. I think Magnolia was in there somewhere. That goes a long way back. And someone recommended Drupal. And I started looking at this. It's like, oh, wow, I could practically do anything I want with this. Mm-hmm. So I switched my entire site over to Drupal and more or less was just running my own site on this content manager for the next several years until I heard about the Minneapolis Drupal Camp and Drupal Users Group, and I started frequenting that.
So it sounds like for a few years you were just kind of a Drupal user.
Mm-hmm.
Were you involved in the community online? Not kind of the once you got started with the Minneapolis group, but were you active on forums or in any issue queues or anything like that? Or was your first real introduction to the community was once you started in Minneapolis?
It was pretty much once I started in Minneapolis. I was fairly low-key. I did a lot of online research to actually sort out what I needed or what I wanted to do from the site. I didn't have a lot of presence on Drupal.org until I started getting involved with the Minneapolis user group.
And so how did you start getting involved? Once you joined the group, what was kind of your next couple steps there?
Well, I gave a few different presentations. One of the first ones I gave at the Minneapolis Drupal Camp was basically taking up Dries on his challenge that if you had a Pro Drupal 7 development, that particular book, and a copy of Drupal and a debugger, you could figure out how Drupal worked. And so I wrote a blog post series just trying to figure out how Drupal works on the inside, because it was fairly easy to find the documentation to write modules or develop themes or build sites. But how the system actually worked was always opaque to me until I started doing this process. And then I wrote a session about it.
So are you talking about the bootstrap phase or everything in general?
A lot of it was the bootstrap phase, but eventually it was down to how do you get from visiting a page to generated content? Mm-hmm. What are these hooks and what are they doing? Who calls them and under what circumstances? And a lot of this rather simple but underlying stuff that people who mostly have just stayed to developing modules or building sites wouldn't know.
So it sounds like you were probably doing that partly to, scratch your own itch, right?
Pretty much.
As you were learning it, you just happened to be documenting what you were learning.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time doing IT education in my day job, so I always have kind of a focus in anything that I learn is useful to me, but it's more useful if I turn that around and teach other people.
So were you involved in any patches or contributing back code at this point, or did that come later?
That came later. It wasn't until I heard a talk about Drupal 8 from Krell that I got really excited about core development.
All right, so that's kind of why, you know, we've been talking about you the past few months. So let's kind of get into that a little bit, because I think when I first saw what you were doing, it was around the time that you had announced that you were going to kind of, you know, take on the task of porting Flag to Drupal 8. Mm-hmm. And you were looking to raise some funds to get you to DrupalCon.
Yep.
So kind of tell us about that process and how that went, and if that was, you know, something that ultimately paid off, you know, not just for you, but for the Flag module and for everybody else.
So somewhere between getting interested about Drupal 8 and joining the community, I actually got, I really wanted to start getting involved, and I realized that I couldn't quite follow up with Drupal core development. At the time, it was 7. Because it was far too complicated and I couldn't get my brain around it with the limited amount of time I had in the evenings to actually work on this. So what I did instead is I started looking to see if there was any modules that I could pick up a co-maintainership for. Because I had tried writing a few modules in the past, but they never really kind of got anywhere. And usually what happened is that it would go as far as I almost have the functionality I want, and then I figured out that I could do the same thing with this combination of modules, and all of the momentum fell out of the project. Mm. But what happened with Flag modules, I was thinking about, man, it would be nice if I could just pick up some co-maintainership of something so I could feel like I have a sense of investment, so I would have something to contribute back. And lo and behold, Flag module came across as something that needed a new co-maintainer. And it didn't seem like a particularly complicated module, certainly not compared to Drupal core or Flag, views or anything like that.
Right.
So I said, sure, I'll take that up. I'm really new and I've got a lot to learn, but I'll try my best. And surprisingly, I got it. And was working with another much more established developer at the time to work on Flag module. And eventually I also picked up another module, Flag Friend, because I didn't quite understand how Flag worked. Mm. So I had to pick up another module, and that one was a lot smaller, and it was a lot easier to wrap my brain around it. And then around in the middle of all of this stuff, Drupal 8 happened.
Well, so just if we could pause just there for 1 second.
Yeah.
You know, if somebody's out there and they're thinking about this, you know, I'd like to get involved, I don't have a good idea for a module, is it a safe bet to say, look at the profile for Quick Sketch, Dave Reed, or Eaton, and just find something?
Yeah, I think there's actually a list for modules seeking co-maintainership, okay. And that would be particularly useful for anyone who really wants to pick that up.
Very good. You know, speaking of which, if anybody still uses UberCart, I actually have a module. It's called UberCart Option Images. Totally up for grabs, everyone.
Is this the part of the podcast where we give away modules?
Yes.
And you get a module, and you get a module, and you get a module. Everybody gets modules.
Your public key's under your seat, everyone. All right. Sorry, Tess. Continue. You said now Drupal 8 comes around.
So I saw a talk about Drupal 8, and one thing that I had learned from Drupal 7 is that I didn't exactly like it. Coming from an enterprise programming background with also a lot of academic information about building object-oriented programs, looking at Drupal 7 was just kind of scary. It was like, how does this even work? You really just come up with the function names on the fly with a string concat and then call? Oh, geez. So it was really kind of surprising that this thing even worked at all to me. When I heard that there is going to be an object-oriented focus on Drupal 8 and that we're going to start putting some design around this, I got really, really excited, because that was one thing that I didn't really like from Drupal 7 all that much. So I started getting into Drupal 8, and I tried to contribute back by reviewing some patches and updating some issues. And the problem is that I kind of hit a wall, and I actually have a slide about this in my talk, about how I was running into what I call the reverse Sisyphus problem, where instead of the story of Sisyphus where you're pushing up the boulder up the hill forever, and then once you get almost to the top, it rolls all the way back down again. The reverse Sisyphus problem is the boulder is already rolling down the hill, and you are trying desperately to chase after it with the hope that maybe, just maybe, you can impart some small amount of momentum in it before it runs away from you again. And that's what Drupal 8 core development was feeling like around 2013 and early 2014, was it was so fast and the pace was so quick that every time I tried getting past the block of wanting to do more than just re-roll a patch or update an issue summary to actually contribute functional working code to something, I hit this wall that every time I tried to catch up with the boulder every night. And by the time I caught up with it, my time was up and I wasn't able to push the boulder at all. So it got away from me by the next night and repeat. And it was really, really frustrating. And I was just not getting anywhere with that.
And would you say that by now that the boulder has slowed down a bit?
A bit.
Okay.
It slowed down a bit. There's still a lot of momentum, but it's a little bit easier to catch up on. A lot of it also is that there's so much more knowledge that you have to study up on. I mean, one evening I really wanted to work on Drupal 8, and I realized that in order for me to do that, I would have to read this 200-page book about Symfony in order just to get some idea of what the heck is going on. And that was part of that process. You just, so many pieces of code are being pulled in from so many different places now that it takes a lot of effort to catch up. And if you're doing this as a hobbyist in your personal time, it's a lot of effort to put in to simply contribute what could be maybe 10 or 13 lines of code.
It can be a pretty sizable task, even just getting started. Do you have any recommended approaches or sites that you use so people can get up to speed on some of that D8? I mean, I know there's a lot of stuff, but really to get over that initial hump.
One of the biggest helps that I had was to actually read the book A Year with Symfony, which was actually very, very useful in giving me the outside Drupal context of what the Symfony project is and how Symfony Core works.
Excellent. I'm looking up the address right now that people can always find it, drupaleasy.com/podcast. Like how I worked out, Ryan?
I've got the link there. You know, the other thing I can add to that, because I'm kind of in the same position where I'm constantly, you know, running after it, is the one thing that really, really helped me, or two things I guess I should say, is where I focused in just in one area. So rather than having to worry about all of Drupal 8, I picked one area to focus on. But the other thing that, you know, helped me immensely was I found a couple of people to help mentor me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who, when I had questions, I could either, you know, go crawl old issues or dig through the code and spend, you know, probably a considerable amount of time doing that, or just ping someone on IRC and say, hey, I'm working on this issue, but I don't understand this part of it. Can you point me in the right direction? And normally in a, you know, 30 to 60 second IRC exchange, I can save, you know, half hour of my time.
Well, and actually, I have a question for Ted. Ted, you taught a class about, you know, how to write modules in Drupal 8. Like, did you find that it was difficult to figure out what was current?
So I was in a position where I was basically working off beta 4 because I wanted to have everybody in the class be at the same position. And then beta 6 actually came out the day before the training. So I decided to just stick with beta 4, which is, I guess, a couple months late. But after the class, actually at the end of the class, like together, we just installed the module on beta 6. And there was only like two changes. I haven't actually gone back through and making sure everything works, but cosmetically it looked like it worked. So it was, as a like module developer, not really involved in core development in 8. I did a tiny bit a long time ago. I'm, you know, happy that really, like, from beta to beta, it seems like very little is being broken. So I'm not particularly focused on keeping up, but say for like training, just hitting the betas.
Sorry, Tess, you were about to say.
Oh, it completely got away from me. So going on IRC is actually a very good strategy, but some people are actually really intimidated by that, and they would prefer to spend hours and hours searching online or reading instead of asking a single human being about that. And it's mostly intimidation. It's not from the perspective of the learner rather than actual intimidation at all, because a lot of people in the Drupal community are very willing to help you. But getting that attention and working up the courage to actually ask questions on IRC is not as easy for everyone as it sounds.
Right, yeah, I have a shortcut to that. I have a solution to that problem. And my solution, and the one that I recommend for people, and the one that I am now on the other side of it, is when I go to Drupal events, whether it's a con or even the global sprint day back in January a few weeks ago, or a camp that has a sprint, the people I make contact with there, I make sure that they know that they can contact me on IRC. Or if I make contact with someone new who might be able to help me, then, you know, I make it a point, you know, very soon after the event to ping them on IRC just to kind of break through that you know, uncomfortableness and say, hey, I met you there. Can you help me with this? So having that initial face-to-face connection, I think, helps a lot for people. So if you're fearful about IRC, get yourself to a code sprint, meet some people, and use that as kind of the way to, you know, get the ball rolling. All right, so Tess, let's get back to the flag module here. So you basically made the decision that you wanted to, spend a considerable amount of your contribution time with the flag module. So you raised some money to get yourself to DrupalCon Austin, correct? That's where we were, I believe, mm-hmm. Austin. With the goal of, you know, sprinting. Did you sprint all week or as much as you could, or?
I sprinted as much as I could in between volunteering and sessions that I wanted to catch up on. And the entire weekend I sprinted.
So did you have a goal for, I kind of know the answer to this just from reading your tweets and some of the other stuff that you wrote, but what was your goal going into Austin? Seeing how you had people contribute money to get you there, was it worthwhile?
I think it was worthwhile because one of the biggest blocks was Vue's support, because Vue's was still a very, very confusing API for me to understand. And I really needed and benefited greatly from the time that Tim Plunkett was able to give me at the sprints to sort out those issues. So I was able to get Vue support working in flag module. The biggest challenge was that Vue support in Drupal 8 still feels very much like Drupal 7 instead of all of the rest of Drupal 8. So the API was still a little bit confusing for me to understand.
So going into Austin, you had some stuff working, it sounds mm-hmm. like, in the flag module. I'm guessing you had like the entities.
We had the config entity. We had a content entity, so we could actually flag stuff, but we had still a lot of other things that weren't quite working. Vue support was the biggest one at that time.
So have you been going at this alone, or have there been other people working on Flag with you?
For most of the first year and a half of the project, it was basically just me. We started getting a lot of pull requests on GitHub sometime in 2014, and we've been getting a lot of them for the last few months. And just recently, we moved back to Drupal.org, so we've been getting lots of patches now too.
So why did you choose to develop it on GitHub first?
So I had this discussion with the other co-maintainers of Flag, and it more or less came down to there was a lot of concern that by developing on the Drupal.org issue queue, we would invite users that didn't necessarily know that the module was ready or that Drupal 8 wasn't ready, and would start adding a lot of issues about, well, this is broken and this is broken and this is broken because the module wasn't finished being written yet. Or the other problem was we would have a lot of commits of, we added this, oh, I had a typo, so I needed to fix this, or here's a whole bunch of code that I added, and it would be confusing for the Git log. That was the argument at the time to keep it off of the main flag repository on Drupal.org. I was thinking about putting it in a sandbox, but sandboxes are not very visible on Drupal.org, and I've been wanting to try doing something on GitHub, so I decided to put all of the stuff on GitHub instead, and I started working from there.
So later, looking back, what decision would you make now?
Well, what we basically came down to is that moving it back to Drupal.org was actually kind of a hair-pulling process because the module had gotten so developed and we were starting to get so many issues that were being resolved and so many pull requests that the commit log was full of reference numbers that referred back to the GitHub issue queue instead of a Drupal.org issue queue number. So we either had to throw all of that GitHub history away and do one massive commit on Drupal.org, or we would just have to assume that we would get all of that mess. When it came to issues, we didn't actually get that many of them. I think the highest number we got to was 121, and a lot of the issues were just me going, this item, I need to do this, I need to do this. It was kind of like a to-do list for myself. So what we came down to in retrospect is that we really should have moved the module back a lot earlier, almost as soon as maybe just before DrupalCon Austin, actually. Once we had flaggings working where you could actually flag entities with the module, was probably the right choice to put it back. But because of difficulties and schedules and miscommunication problems, it stayed on GitHub for another year after that.
I think it's so interesting, the fact that we have, you know, we have the Drupal.org issue queue and repository, but GitHub has such really good tools, and that just a few years ago, when we made the switch from CVS to Git, we actually, I think part of the discussion was, why not just do everything on GitHub? I wonder if we were just making that transition now, you know, if God forbid we were still on CVS and we were going to transition to Git now, with GitHub being as mature as it is now, would we still make the same decision?
I think that comes down to more of a sociological problem than a technical one. And my thought is that if we were to start putting things on GitHub, and there are prominent projects that are run on GitHub, Drush, Rules for Drupal 8, those are actually projects that are completely run on GitHub instead of Drupal.org.
Forget about Drupal projects. I mean, there are huge open source projects that are managed on GitHub.
That's true. But the real question is, what would actually work best for our community? A lot of the community goes through Drupal.org, and we have a sense of ownership when we have our code on Drupal.org. We have a funding mechanism to make sure that's sustainable, and a support infrastructure to make sure that's sustainable. So there's a lot of stuff we've already built up to maintain that infrastructure. That'd be very difficult to tear down and just say, let's use GitHub instead.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the one thing also is, you know, you want to get your project listed on Drupal.org. There's sort of a process for that, and all those processes would have to sort of be reworked, you know, because you could then put your thing on GitHub, which right now you could do anyway, but how would it ever get on Drupal.org? You know, maybe some people would just be lazy and never list it on Drupal.org, and now we're essentially forking the list of available projects, and exactly. That would get really even harder to use than it is now, right?
Well, that becomes a Drupal.org packaging script issue.
Yeah, and sure, I think that's what's going to happen going forward, actually.
Yeah.
Because as we bring in packages and a wider PHP community, we might see more of that fragmentation going on. It becomes a question of how we want to do that and how we want to see our code managed as a community.
Exactly. All right, so that's a rabbit hole that I could keep asking questions about and talking about, but let's pull ourselves out of that.
Hey, is it wrong to just say, could we get like the 60-second overview of what is flag module? Maybe for people who don't really know why it's so awesome,
Bryce, isn't it?
I don't know. I'm just
like
say,
half hour ago.
Flag is by far one of my most favoritest of all time ever Drupal modules, and I don't really have any sites that don't have flag. If they have even a reasonable complexity to them, they basically, you know, it lets you add this extra little. I was talking to Ted about this a little bit over the weekend. You know, you could think of it like it's a property, right? Is this published or unpublished? Is this promoted to front page or not? Is this in moderation or not? Is this spam or not? It was originally developed as something called Views Bookmarks, right? Mm-hmm. That's the ancient history of Flag. And it was just a way to create a relationship between a user and a node without there having to be like a node reference or a user reference going on. And Tess, you also mentioned flag friend.
Yeah. So let's see here. I'm trying to bring up the definition that I wrote. Flag module enables administrators to define Boolean fields that can be attached to site content, which each user may set or unset. So the idea being that it's a per user identifier versus something that is for the administrator. And this is why you can use it in, like, you can make a bookmark flag, or you can make a this is spam flag, or a whole bunch of other kinds of things. Flag friend takes this concept and allows you to go to another user on the same site and says, that person is my friend. And right. It has its own little workflow of can you validate the friendship, and then has view support so you can view what other people, what your friends are posting, and so on.
So, like, if you were building a Twitter clone or an Instagram clone or maybe a YouTube clone, you'd want to have a way of saying, this is my favorite. You know, I like this. I heart this. Mm-hmm. I star this. I plus one this. And so Flag can be really good for that sort of thing on a very simple level, you know. And it integrates with views very well. You know, and it's really easy to say, get a list of all of my things. I've used it on a lot of sites as sort of like an analog to the Drupal core's built-in shortcuts module. You know, I want to get a list of all of the pieces of content that I know about, so I actually have it. Every time you create a piece of content, you also automatically flag it. And then if you would like, you could flag other things as well, so that you can get a list of all the blog posts that you want to, you know, refer back to in the you know, corporate wiki, or you know, all of the events that you want to make sure that show up on your personal calendar and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Very useful module.
So where do we stand with Flag in D8 now? Like, if someone downloaded, you know, most recent beta for Drupal 8, can they also download Flag and have it mostly working, all working, partly working?
Mostly working. The Flag module does have most of its view support in at this point. There's still a few outliers that I need to track down when I finally have time to work on it again. You can flag content. You can define multiple flags. Flags are exportable, and you can transfer them, the configurations, from site to site fairly easily. So a lot of it's working, actually.
So is this is it feature equivalent with D7, or are there more features or fewer features, or if those are only three options?
Well, it's kind of like a lopsided cake right now. On one side, it is actually has more features than the 7 version, but there's still a few things, some regressions and some misses in functionality that didn't make it from 7 to 8.
Is the overall goal to have it feature equivalent, or are there new features which you or other maintainers have in mind that are eventually going to be added?
Well, one of the newest features that I really, really wanted to add was what I'd call the field entry link type. Normally, when you flag something, it's just a Boolean state. It's either flagged or not flagged. You can actually attach fields to whatever flagging is created when you flag something. The problem is that there's no way to really easily expose that without writing code. And so it's not very well leveraged. In fact, flag friend still stiffs everything inside of a table somewhere, which is really ridiculous.
Yeah.
But
it's like you read my mind with this answer, because this was going to be my next question.
Yeah, you can actually field flag. So what I did is one afternoon I had the idea of, I wonder what would happen if I tried writing, you know, flag friend for Drupal 8. And I started playing around with some concepts and eventually came down to, it would be really nice if I had a link type that actually let me enter in arbitrary field values that I've defined on the flag. And it turned out to be really simple to add that. So wow. That's one of the new features that's in flag 8 is you have a – when you click a field entryable flag, it takes you to another form which will allow you to populate preselected fields and then flag that entity.
So it's like metadata on the flag.
Yep.
So how about – oh, go ahead, Ted.
Was there a sort of discussion between you or anybody else involved about, you know – Should we port all features, or, you know, should we try to simplify it, or, you know, look at what features people want and add those, or was it just sort of organic as you went along?
It was for the most part, it was very organic. A lot of the functionality is still there. There's not that much that changed. It's little things like that changed. Like, we don't have a permissions section in the flag add form because we assume everyone will just go to the core permissions form in order to do that instead. That's like one of the only ones I can think of that's not the same.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
How about, dare I ask, is there rules integration in D8 yet?
Not yet. That is definitely in my target to actually get a full version of the module, because I actually want to make that as much integration as possible, because that's how you really leverage flags, with rules. Yeah. But rules wasn't really developed enough yet for Drupal 8 at the time for me to actually start integrating that into the module. And lately, my time has been so compressed that I haven't had a lot of time to actually go back to that particular idea and start working on that.
So for Drupal 8, with the way they're developing rules, I mean, I don't know particularly a lot about how they're developing it, but will there need to be like particular integration for a module like flag, or is it just, if it's an entity, will it automatically get all of the, you know, up, this flag was updated, was, you know, was deleted or something like that? Is there a need for individual modules to have their own integration?
I don't know exactly, but I can imagine that there's still going to be some custom code that will have to be written.
Well, like, even just if you think if something has been flagged a certain number of times, I would think there'd have to be at least something for that.
Right.
Well,
okay. I guess that's a little down for what we're talking about right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so do you have any more thoughts, Tess, about flag before I think we're getting ready to wrap this up and get onto some news?
No, I don't think so.
Let me ask one more thing, and that is, if somebody wants to get involved, like, what type of help do you and the flag module need right now? Are you looking just for coders, or are you looking for people who can, you know, download and test and report issues? You're looking for, you know, themers or documentation?
We've got a lot of the documentation together. We could use some help with theming, a lot with coding, particularly with views and also with rule support. Those are two real big issues right now that we need to work on.
Is there a separate, like, pound Drupal flag or anything like that, or is everything just in the issue queue and then in the normal pound Drupal contribute?
Just in Drupal Contribute and the normal issue queue.
All right. Fantastic. Well, thank you very much, Tess, for all your hard work on this. This is outstanding. As Ryan, you know, said, and you know, flag is one of those modules that people who have been around Drupal for a long time just use a lot. and the fact that there's been a lot of momentum on it for the past, I guess, at least a year, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that it looks like we're going to have something that we can use the same day that Drupal 8 is released is pretty important. And I think a lot of the credit goes to you.
Okay, Mike, how about some Drupal Easy news?
Yeah, all right. So let me real quick mention that the next edition of the Drupal Career Online starts in just over a month. So if you're looking to train up in Drupal, either you or your clients or you have a coworker or a colleague who wants to learn Drupal, the next session of our live online career program starts on March 10th. This is not a boot camp. This is not, you know, fire hose training. It's not facilitated self-teaching. It's live online training. We pride ourselves on quality, active training focused on the student with plenty of opportunities to engage with your instructor, who is usually me, and your fellow students in our online learning community. We do everything through GoToMeeting. It's always a live instructor. We meet online 3 times a week for a total of 12 weeks. And you can find out more information on DrupalEasy.com/DCO for Drupal Career Online. I also want to mention, I finally had a chance to take a breath. And now that I'm home and the classroom portion of AquaEU is complete, I actually wrote an article on DrupalEasy.com about my time at AquaEU and the experience and the students. I called it creating a talent underpinning. So that is also available on DrupalEasy.com. Really interesting experience. Really fun to kind of be working inside of AquaEU's office for a total of 6 weeks and continuing to meet with the students once a week here while they're in the rotations. I'm actually going to be back up there in about 2 weeks. There is a, they're calling Code Day Boston, where myself and the students are going to volunteer for a 24-hour code day for high school students. So we're going to be mentors and help them with whatever projects they want to work on for 24 hours straight. Yeah, so check out those two things on DrupalEasy.com.
Excellent. Well, now I guess it's time for our three stories. I guess the first one's a recap of Drupal Camp New Jersey. I guess both Ted and Ryan, you were there?
That's correct.
Okay, and Ryan, I saw your post about the airport bar. Did you survive that?
Yeah. No, it's just, the very closest airport to Princeton is a place called Trenton Mercer Airport, which Ted can attest to is basically one building. Literally, maybe no bigger than the house that I live in. It's this tiny, tiny little building, and the terminal area must have been a storage area at one point before 2001, when they had to have now two areas for everybody to hang out in. And so in the bottom floor, there was just this little tiny, bar top with a couple of bottles of booze behind it and one cooler of drinks. And one cooler with like a few sandwiches in it. It was hilarious. And it said that was at gate 4. I was like, gate 4? I'm pretty sure it's just the gate. And you walk out and you actually walk up a little stairs and everything. So there was that. But no, the Drupal Camp New Jersey at Princeton was amazing. It started out, I was able to help out with a Blink Reaction training that was a site building training. And Ted did a training about Drupal 8 module development, right?
Yep. And the training that I had, we had people actually that were sort of a few people that were from a symphony background. So that was interesting that they have no, interest in getting involved in Drupal 7, but they are thinking about using Drupal 8, when it's more stable. So I guess that's sort of what a lot of people are hoping to bring in. So some people are being attracted. Anecdotally, at least. And yeah, I think it went well. It's always a really well-run camp. And they had mentoring on and sprints on Sunday. Well, they actually had sprints, I think, since Thursday.
The Drupal Association, what do they call the grants for, actually, for the Drupal 8 specific grants, was used to fly in people and, you know, I think feed them to a certain extent also, so that we could have some core contributor types, you know, XJM and Kathy Thays, and probably too many names to mention right now.
So I think they got a lot of work done, and then there was more sprints on Sunday, which I was hoping to stay for, but I wanted to beat the snowstorm back, so I had to leave early in the morning. But yeah, great, greatly run camp, and if anybody is in that area next year, I definitely recommend it.
There were free reusable coffee cups that are actually really cool. It's got like a screw-on lid, and it's insulated, and it's got a picture of a DrupalCon coffee pot on it, which is really fun. But the keynote, there was a keynote by a guy whose first name is Paul, and I will look up his name, and we'll link him in the show notes. He did a really, really interesting keynote session about sort of the relationship between programmers and their managers, and how sometimes it's an abusive relationship, but it's usually because the programmer is saying yes too often. Paul M. Jones. Thank you, Andrew. And he is a longtime PHP contributor for, actually, I think even longer than Drupal Project has existed. And he's on the PHP Framework Interoperability Group, but his talk was really about sort of how businesses get run. And some businesses are more commitment-oriented, he said, which is very similar to, like, if you understand the lean startup or agile methodologies, that's a commitment-oriented organization, and some are more process-oriented. And his example was that, was like NASA, where, you know, we have to get a man to the moon, and we if we fail, then someone dies, right? And so there has to be a lot of process and a lot of, you know, double-checking everything, and nothing is in question, versus the commitment-oriented. You say you get something done, and you're sort of given the freedom and the autonomy to do it. And when you get in between those two things, it was something from Richard Feynman, who he said it was the cargo cult organization. And if you're not sort of on either side of that fence, then somebody's being abused, essentially. And I think they did record all the sessions beyond the keynote as well. So you can get audio recordings of the sessions, and I know a lot of the presenters are posting their slides. So do take a look at the session list for that. Anything else you want to throw in there, Ted?
No.
Just was there a code sprint?
You walked away for that part, Mike, but we did talk about code sprints quite a bit.
Yeah, there's supposed to be one on Sunday. Well, there was one on Sunday, but I was supposed to attend, but to avoid the snow, I left.
So not very committed to the Drupal project, is what you're saying,
no,
Ted.
It was either stay and leave Sunday morning or leave Monday night. But the keynotes, this camp, the ones I remember of the keynotes in past years, they seem to always get really interesting keynotes that aren't necessarily straight from the Drupal world. The one that previously they had, I think, a professor of computer science at Princeton who was really involved in C, in creating C, and he gave a great talk.
That's cool.
So what do you think? Do you think, because we're kind of in the planning for Florida Drupal Camp, we're kind of at that point now where we're trying to decide on our featured speakers. So
I accept.
No, I'm a big fan for off-topic keynotes.
I don't like Florida, but I'll go.
Okay.
Thank you, Ryan,
for taking me seriously, unlike everybody else.
Yeah.
So Ryan, you like the off topic.
Right. Things, every DrupalCon, right, we have Dries, who's sort of mandatory, and then we have the two off topic ones. And I think those are always really great, not only because the theme of the Drupal community has been getting off the island, but because I go to a lot of DrupalCons and Drupal camps, and I don't really go to that many sessions. I go to BOFs, and I go to code sprints, and I meet people, and I talk to them in the hallway. So the things that I sort of look forward to are things that I've never been exposed to.
But don't you think a con audience is a little bit different than a camp audience, though?
Yeah, I think in camp you do have a lot of people who are totally new to Drupal, and I do see the benefit in a Drupal-centric one where, you know, I don't really know what Drupal is or what the community is, and, you know, you just have these individual sessions, which you may have a couple sessions that are like total intro, but it's nice to, I see the benefit in both, you know. Maybe for newcomers, though, maybe the Drupal-centric one is a benefit.
Well, and I also know going to New England, you know, there are so many camps within sort of a, you know, a close drive that I talked to a lot of people that said they're not going to be going to Los Angeles because they can go to so many camps throughout the year. We don't really have that down here in the South. So, you know, we may be more inclined to go to the farther away camps or to Bad Camp or to the Drupal cons. But otherwise you're not going to get to really see those unless you watch them on video.
Yeah. Those people in the Northeast, they're spoiled.
They are.
There's a camp every weekend.
Yeah. It's like, if it's more than 2 hours away, it's like, drive 2 hours for a camp. What are you, crazy?
Only two. I think I drove four once.
Yeah.
I have to drive four everywhere. I'm
yeah, you're 4 hours from
us.
I mean, the closest camp for us is over six, right? So,
yeah,
and that's,
other than
our camp, just one. Most of the rest of them are 10 or 12. Yeah. So
I did like, was it last year where you guys did the three, like no one keynote, but you had three large
sessions? Yeah, we're working on that. Well, Mike is mostly, but we're working on that right now.
Yeah, we're going to do the same thing. We're going to do multiple featured sessions.
Now, what about timeliness with these sessions? It might not have to be black or white of, you know, is it about Drupal or not? But we have a pretty big thing coming up, you know, Drupal 8, and there's a lot of FUD out there. Wouldn't that be, you know, some good topics on different levels to bring up Drupal 8 and why we need it and why it's a good thing and not to be scared?
Well, we should totally get some of the other organizers on right now and turn this podcast into like a planning conference call.
Yes.
We should just record our next planning call, and that'll be the next podcast.
I think the
welcome
biggest
to episode
thing
324, subsection 28 of the Drupal podcast, Drupal Easy Podcasts. This is section A, line item 22.
Wow, you hit the nail on the head. That's exactly how our planning calls go for Florida Drupal Camp.
The biggest thing you guys could do to increase my attendship is have it in January or February when everybody wants to be in Florida.
Yeah, but you know what? That involves us getting our act together over the holidays, which is...
Yeah, that's true.
And I'm pretty sure I've lost sight of the top of this rabbit hole at this point. So I'm pretty sure
New Jersey. We're talking about New Jersey. So let's
New Jersey. There we go. Okay, so
it is the king of New Jersey.
Yes. Were you welcomed with...
nobody recognizes me there as the king, right? We need to fix that.
Right, yeah, you need a crown. Yeah. Or at least a royal brooch or something.
Yeah.
Okay. How about we move on to Mike Kieran's update, or at least someone who claims to be him, on Drupal Easy Podcast number 143. So we actually got some feedback.
When Ted and I were talking about views, and we didn't know what we were talking about.
Really?
Somebody actually replied. I'm very appreciative of this comment.
Okay.
Oh, this is like a blog post. It's not. It's more than a comment. So Mike Kieran, I guess is how you, or Kieran, K-E-R-A-N. Sorry, Mike, for mispronouncing your last name. Although maybe in one of the five times I've said it, I got it right. So, but we were talking about the fact that views in core for Drupal 8, when you rewrite a field, the syntax is now twig-based rather than the views token-based. We were kind of talking out loud about, you know, maybe should all of Drupal's token system be twig-based, or why just views rewrite? And we had all kinds of questions and we had no facts, which is pretty much, you know, the way our podcast goes. But Mike, who is actually one of the people working on views in core, actually wrote us, and let me just read a little bit from what he wrote, because it answers a lot of our questions. He said, someone, and then Ted, asked why only in views, meaning why is twig syntax only in views. And Mike writes, since this was late in coming, beta was announced while the patch was in flight, It was mostly a matter of scope, and I got buy-in from the Views and Drupal Core lead at DrupalCon Amsterdam. I would love to see all token replacements in Core using Twig instead of our homegrown token format. Until that point, we're stuck with two formats. Even in Views, it's not consistent. Add an unfiltered text header area, and you'll see what I mean. But it'll be easier to get those changes in now that Twig's foot is in the door. So I think that pretty much answers a lot of our questions, where it's, you know, this was kind of the first salvo, and it sounds like it's, I think some of our concerns are still legitimate about, in some cases, you know, tokens are used for things other than content, so it may not make sense to have Twig syntax there. But as far as user-facing content-y type things, it seems like it's, you know, the momentum's now starting to shift towards Twig syntax.
Okay, and this is going to go slightly into the weeds again, but isn't there a thing in Twig that you could say, like, limit the different operators so that maybe you're not allowed to use loops right here, but you're still allowed to use the fields and maybe the, I'm going to call them modifiers, and I'm not sure if that's the right thing, but the functions, right? Like the pipe operator.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if
you can. I don't know.
We need to,
but that would be neat, Mike, right? Karen. To be able to say this pipe length, and then get a number out for the number of times that something was done inside of a token and that kind of stuff. Because that's one of the things that token has a lot of, is those little things where you can dig into a particular, like a date field, but then you can specify the format of the date. And that's really similar to the stuff that you're doing inside of Twig. So I could see, Maybe token's never going to get replaced inside of the Drupal 8 lifecycle, but they are trying to accomplish a lot of the same things, right?
I think it would be really hard to get it replaced after the first version of Drupal is out. I mean, I know they're going to be making changes in like 8.1, but you know, after people start using tokens in Drupal 8 on production sites, you can't really take it out, right?
Could be.
Until yeah, Drupal 9, be, I would assume. That would be really tough.
Exactly. Yeah.
Maybe you could use both, but so if it does get replaced, can we take the credit for it, Drupal Easy Podcast?
Yeah. Put that right in the commit credit.
Well, yeah, we're gonna be able to get organizations on commit logs one of these days, right?
So we should just start spitballing every crazy idea comments. We can.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Cats on the internet.
Grab it. That's a thing. We gotta make tons of predictions, and then at the end of the year we'll just filter all just the ones that actually came true, and we'll have like a, you know, we'll put it together as an audio we predicted it all kind of thing.
I like that. Yes. The Nostradamus approach.
Yes, just throw it at the wall, see what sticks, and only report what sticks.
Something right. Will stick.
Sounds like a good plan. All right, so I'm sure Mike will, Mike, we're expecting you to leave another comment this week on everything we just got wrong and correct us, and we'll see how many podcasts in a row we can keep this going. I think we have a third story, right? Where is it?
Yeah, we have a third story. It's kind of a general one. It's not very Drupal specific, but I think it's apropos to our podcast.
Oh, yeah, I like this story. I like this one a lot, as a matter of fact.
So this story made me change my host file.
Did it really? Well, here, let's actually talk about the story, and then we can get into the details there. So it's a post on lifehacker.com titled Programmers, What Does It Take to Be a Developer Other Than Coding? And it kind of really resonated with me when I saw it, because one of the things that I've been, you know, doing with the AquaU students is, just like whenever I teach Drupal, is talk about all the other things you need to know other than, you know, how to create a content type. You know, all of the so to speak, non-Drupal-y things. And there's actually, the actual article doesn't have any content. It was basically just posed as a question, and people left comments, and people on Lifehacker, you can vote comments up and down. But there's a great list that floated up to the top, and I won't go through everything, but I'll name a few of them. You know, obviously how to use source control, how to flesh out business problems in terms of code, how to take rejection, how to create time estimates out of thin air, when to say no, unit testing, branching strategies, design patterns. So Ted, you said it changed, you know.
My host file, yeah. Well, so I used to waste a lot of time on Lifehacker. So I added it to my host file and pointed it to 127.0.0.1. And then I saw it in the podcast notes, so I had to take it out so I could do it.
Are you serious? No,
I'm serious. I have a whole list of sites I put into my host file that now point to my local host. So
but
I can't
wait,
go to
did
them.
You find that on lifehacker.com? How to do that?
No, I didn't. I do it for work. So I was like, yeah, why not? I'll, you know, get rid of these.
So you
sites.
Basically did this to protect you against yourself.
Well, I can always use my iPad if I want to lounge and read some of this stuff, but like I found myself being distracted too easily in work following
links. That displays that's a stunning lack of self-control, Ted.
I have stunning self-control. I controlled myself via the host file.
Yeah, but that's going off. Why not just not go to the website?
I'm not going to the website.
You know, I have a feeling we can have an entire podcast with just Ted reading the entries in that host file. Like what other Ted stopping?
Gizmodo. It's just, you know, The Onion, stuff like that.
Well, one of mine would definitely be Instructables.
Yeah.
You guys ever go to that one?
I've never heard of that.
You never heard of Instructables?
No. And your kids would love it. They would ask you to build them so many things after they saw them on the site.
No. I've heard of Instructables. I haven't heard of someone editing their host file.
Oh, blocking the sites.
Yeah.
Maybe I should write an article and see if I can get it on Lifehacker.
You'll never know. Oh, my goodness. That is funny as hell, Ted.
You know one site that I'm never going to add to my local host file, Mike?
DrupalEasy.com.
Well, there's that, but also webenabled.com.
Webenabled.com. Why not? Why wouldn't you add that?
Well, it would prevent me from going and getting all of my awesome development sites that I set up there, including this weekend at New Jersey Drupal Camp. You know, we were trying to get everybody set up with their own local Drupal install, and rather than get on the phone with IT support to try and get someone to allow, you know, them to install a program on their laptop, we just said, hey, go to this site, webenabled.com, sign up for a free account, hit install Drupal, you're done. It's a pretty cool project they got going on over there.
Yeah, I love the fact that it's still, you know, for me, it's the best tool to teach with because it forces you to do things the right way. It forces you to learn about Git pushing and Git pulls, you know, the right way without using a UI or taking any shortcuts. You know, I'm a big believer that when you teach or when you learn something, you really need to, you know, learn what's going on, you know, behind the UI first before you start using a UI.
Well, you know, they have things like Drush automatically installed. You can switch between different versions of PHP if your environment wants you to have something like that. Get one-click backups of your site. So, you know, you want to move it to your local machine or you want to move it to another host, it's right there. It's just a great tool. You can share things with teams. So, you know, in the case where you're teaching someone, I can have you set up the account, but you can still share the site with me so that I could, you know, get access to it as well. It's great stuff.
Yeah, I would definitely not want to block that in my host file.
Very good. Check out webenabled.com. Go ahead.
That's definitely not one of the ones I added. I'm not crazy.
Now, whenever we talk about a site, Ted's going to have to declare if he has blocked it or not. Well, how about we move up to some picks of the week, which hopefully Ted hasn't blocked. Ted, why don't you kick us off on your pick of the week?
Okay, so I'm picking on one that I haven't actually used myself. I've used something very similar to it. Actually, I guess I've used a fork of it. So this is a Drupal Development Environment, VM, by Jeff Geerling. Is that how you pronounce his name? So it's a GitHub repository where he set up a Drupal Vagrant VM using Ansible, and you can basically, he has a lot of documentation for it, how you can get it and use it as your local development environment with VirtualBox and Vagrant and Ansible. And you don't have to do all that much besides cloning it and then changing a few config files. So if you want sort of a quick start to start using Vagrant, this is probably a good place to start. And I've just been hearing so much about Ansible as far as being easier than other provisioning systems. So, and we're using this on a project I'm working with, a fork of it. Aaron Froelich made a fork of it. It's one of the, a bunch of, actually, it's 21 forks of this project. So that looks, is a good sign, I would say.
Neat.
Okay, Ryan, how about you go next?
Very good. There's one thing I got in my email this week, and I read through it, at least skimmed over it, and I said, this is going to be really useful for somebody who is just sort of like in that mode where they're wondering what the heck is Drupal 8. It's put out by Angie Byron from Acquia, and it's called The Ultimate Guide to Drupal 8. And one of the things that made me happy was that there was no, like, you know, please sign up for an account in order to be able to download it or anything like that. I was just able to click download. And it contains sort of like a list of all the you know, new systems, new features, new APIs at some level too that are going on in Drupal 8, and you know, all the new modules that are included in core. It's just sort of like a whistle-stop tour of what, you know, where we are right now with new stuff in Drupal 8 and why it's going to be so awesome when it comes out. Probably people that listen to this podcast know a lot of these things already, but it may be a good thing to share with your manager or, you know, a client to let them know, you know, whenever it happens 3 years from now, it'll be awesome.
And Ryan, just for a quick thing, it looks like you do have to type in your name and email. You must have been logged into Acquia.com.
Maybe I'm logged in. Okay. I take it all back. Don't read this thing. No, I'm just kidding. the other one is, since we have Tess on and we're talking about Flag, I have to bring up a Flag module that as soon as I install Flag, I also always install almost every time. It's called Flag Weights, which basically just adds, and maybe Tess would know, just maybe using the field system she was talking about, a weight field to a flag so that you can, just like you would do with menu items, blocks, taxonomy terms, drag a flagged item up or down inside of a view so that you can order them in any arbitrary way. So do check out Flag Weights. If you're building like a slideshow or you want to, you know, emulate the features of Node Queue, Flag Weights is going to be a real good one for you.
Excellent. I haven't used that one. I'm going to have to check it out. And Mike, since leaving you to your own devices in the chat room is causing trouble, how about you tell us yours?
Registry rebuild.
So important.
Yeah. Nice.
Has anybody used this? And if so, why the hell hasn't anybody told me about this until just a few weeks ago?
There's this really awesome tool. It's called Registry Rebuild.
You guys suck.
Is this the Drush RR thing? This is Drush RR,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yep, that's it.
I can't believe none of you have made this your pick of the week and have left me floundering without this tool for
Well, you never asked.
Yes. Oh, yeah. My goodness.
I can't believe that we haven't had this on.
That's, yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. This is, it's such a time saver. So here's the situation. Let's say you're building your Drupal site and it's a brand new site. It's not from a distribution or from anything. And you download Drupal core and do Drush DL flag, Drush DL views, Drush DL 13 other modules. By default, those modules, unless you've got something special configured, those modules are going to go in sites all modules. Correct? Correct.
Mm-hmm. If you don't.
And then let's say you want to write a, what'd you say, Ted?
No, never mind.
Then let's say that I picked this 10 episodes back.
Are you kidding me?
Nope.
No. If you haven't made a contrib folder, if you make a contrib folder first, they'll go into contrib.
Yeah.
Was that your point?
Well, yes. But you know, let's say later on you don't have a contrib folder yet, but later on you say, oh, I want to have a custom directory where all my custom modules, and maybe I want to have a features directory for your features, and you want to reorganize that modules directory. And you want to put all of those previously downloaded and now enabled modules, you want to move them from sites all modules into sites all modules contrib. Now you can do that, but generally, and what I've had to do in the past is actually go into the system table and update all those paths. and then clear caches about 13 times, and you know, magically things will start working again. And it's time consuming and tedious, and you'll ultimately miss something here or there, and it can kind of be a pain in the butt. But it is possible to move those modules from one directory in your modules folder to another. Well, registry rebuild is basically a drush command. It's not a module, so you download it and you install it in your .drush directory. There's installation instructions right there on the project page. And it allows you to basically reorganize your modules directory or your themes directory and then run drush rr, and it will basically look up the new locations of all those modules and update your system table for you.
And so it's magic. One of the big things that I like this for is the PHP classes, because in Drupal 7, it will auto-register, so you can just use the magic methods for the classes. And if you move those directories, Drupal starts throwing 500 errors and gets really confused, and it will go through and remap all those to make your life a lot easier.
All right, so yeah, I have to apologize. Oh, no, go ahead.
I was going to say, if you get the white screen of death and Drupal CC all, Drush CC all does not fix it, then this is what I usually try next.
So I'm going to apologize only to Ryan here. Apparently, Ryan, you did make this a pick of the week back in June of last year. So I apologize, Ryan, for not listening to you. Andrew and Ted?
You never asked me.
I listened to Ryan, so I knew, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, I want to thank Eric Webb up at Acquia, who was the one who, you know, saw the issue that we were having. And I was, you know, it wasn't a huge issue. It was like one or two modules I had to move from one place to another. And he's like, oh, just do Drush RR. And I'm like, what's Drush RR? And then there you go. So thank you, Eric.
Did he say RRRR? Laugh at you.
Was it Pirate Day? RR.
All right, who's next?
Tess, would you like to go next?
Sure. My pick of the week is Drupal Console. It's a Drupal 8 port of the Symfony Console project, which will allow you to do a number of different command line interactions. But the biggest feature is that it allows you to generate a lot of boilerplate code for Drupal 8, because there's a lot of that you need to do in Drupal 8. So this project makes it a lot easier to just type in a command, and it will do a lot of that work for you.
So I know this works totally differently, but if people are familiar with the module builder, the Drush module builder for Drupal 7, this might be like a quick start to make a module, right?
Yep, that's the idea. And I think it also has commands to add additional routes to your routing file and fill out block plugins and a few other things.
Yeah, I was going to ask, is it interactive at all?
Yes.
Can you say it? Okay.
This also might be similar if people come from, I think, Ruby on Rails to something like this, but I know CakePHP, you would be able to say, well, make this model or make this view and via like an interactive terminal, and it would do stuff for you. So it sounds like maybe this does similar thing where you just sort of a quick start to speeding up your module development.
It sounds like it would be something that's good for people who are also new to Drupal 8 development to kind of get some of those files out there and some of the formats in there that you would normally spend, you know, going on Drupal.org to try and find them and try and figure out what's missing.
I'm a big fan of this module too, because they have an animated GIF, so I can just watch it loop through forever. But one thing I noticed is it has one of those patterns, like when you install Composer or a lot of Ruby related things, you see people do this where they're like, just curl down this file and then pipe it directly into the shell or into PHP. But I'm noticing that it comes off of a regular HTTP site and not an HTTPS site. And so that makes me nervous. So I was wondering if maybe we could start like a little Drupal fund me so that we could get this site its own SSL certificate, so that I would be less afraid of running a script on my laptop that I just downloaded from who knows what website.
Well, one thing you could do in the interim is download it, then you could review the code, and then you could just pipe it to PHP as, you know, two separate steps.
I just want to make sure that I put out the warning that, you know, people out there, just because you read download this script and run it does not mean that you should download the script and run it. on this one, but in particular, I'm sure it's great. But just check it out, okay? If it has RM, you know, / star, you might have a problem.
So what you're saying is, don't trust everything you read on the internet.
Yes.
Okay.
You could probably find the same file that they, because they're hosting on GitHub, right? So you could probably find the GitHub version when you use the HTTPS version of it and pull it down.
And Mulder agrees.
The more you know. That's all I'm saying.
No, it's a you good know, point.
Speaking of the more you know, did anybody see, I'm not talking to you, Ryan, because I know the answer is probably going to be no. The Super Bowl last night, the halftime show.
Yes.
No, I didn't.
Okay, so Andrew, I'm talking to you, I guess.
Oh, she has the star over her head. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Well, no, I'm wondering if you're going to ask me about my future occupation that I observed last night.
Well, let's get to that in a minute.
Okay.
Is it a person wearing a fanny pack filled with super glue?
No. It's the dancing shark, isn't it?
Yes, that's the job I want in the future. I want to be a dancing shark.
Did it bother you at all, Andrew, the fact that the palm trees had eyes, the sharks had eyes,
the beach boards did not?
Exactly.
Wow.
That's.
I didn't see this, but I know that eyes are standard on sharks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's fine.
The other thing is, if you go back and watch it, the shark on the right was spot on with their moves. The shark on the left was a little loose on their dancing.
Sounds like a potential job opening for you then, Andrew.
Yep. My campaign, 2016, Andrew for left shark.
You could maybe start off with like a deli, you know, with like a sandwich board and a shark outfit.
Yeah.
By the way, Andrew, on the street corner. That's stage right shark for you.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah. You have to work up to the shark. Maybe start as the palm tree who weren't actually moving all that much. They were just kind of swaying.
Surfboard. They don't have eyes.
Yeah, what the hell was up with that? That was really...
Surfboards don't qualify for the criteria of sentience, apparently.
Yeah.
Beach balls do? I mean, if you're going to give the beach balls eyes, you really should give the surfboards.
I don't see the Super Bowl, but this sounds like it came from some dystopian sci-fi over here.
Oh, no. I mean, anybody who likes science fiction should watch Katy Perry's show. At least what, the first two-thirds of it were just trippy beyond belief. And the projection from the overhead, from the dome, was really neat.
Yeah,
I'm sure it looked great in person.
Just to bring this conversation full circle, at the very end, as she was singing the last song, Fireworks, or Firework, I don't know if it's plural or not, she was like up in the air on this little platform, and it looked like the more you know, star with stuff trailing off it. That's
Stardust? Yeah.
Stardust, yes. And the Patriots won, so we'll just say that. Just a
spoiler. Come on, put tags there. Well, how about we move on to mine? Mine's a really quick one, and before the call, I was catching some flack for this, but I got to give you the backstory before I give you my pick of the week. So I had to debug an issue that involved panels, panelizer, panels IPE, C tools, and moderation workbench.
Oh boy.
Yeah,
that's workbench moderation.
Oh yeah, sorry. Workbench
moderation.
You still
have your hair.
Yeah, barely. But what I used was PHP Storm, but we've all heard of PHP Storm. But I've used PHP Storm with Xdebug, so I could put in, you know, watches and breakpoints, so I could go in and see what all the variables, what the objects were doing. There's a lot of OOP code in there to see what they were doing at various states, rather than having to, you know, put in DPMs everywhere to see what they were and reload the page 100 times, which is really good because I was debugging an AJAX interaction. So if you haven't tried it already, PHP Storm with Xdebug. It's a little difficult to set up your first time, but once you get used to it, it can be really helpful in complex debugging.
I actually have a blog post. Actually, it's a quick tip that I will link to because I've had to set it up a few times now, and I actually have it working where you can debug not only from a browser, but also Drush commands, and also if you're running unit tests, where you have to call Drupal 8's run scripts.
Oh, that's neat. I never thought about actually running those through it. That'd be cool.
Yeah. So here, so I will put this in the notes, and because every time I do it, I find one other little thing that I missed, and I have a running list of all this stuff with screenshots and everything. So if you want to get debugging with PHP Storm up and running, I think, you know, asterisk included here, I think it has everything you need.
Just not Drush RR.
Yeah, everything but Drush RR is in it.
Okay, we're running out of time, so how about we move on to upcoming events? Ryan, did you want to talk about DrupalCon Latin America?
Well, I think I would like for Tess to tell us a little bit about it, because she's the only one I know that's going for sure. Well, we hope for sure.
I still haven't gotten my passport back, so... it's going to be in Bogota, Colombia on February 10th through the 12th. Hopefully I'll be speaking there, as well as a few different people from Blink Reaction that I know. And it's the first DrupalCon in Latin America, so it's going to be a really interesting, unique experience.
What is it they say? Third time's the charm?
Hopefully.
So yeah, I mean... I'm sure that the videos will be hitting the internet almost instantaneously, and we'll be able to hear some excellent Colombian accents as we go into, you know, the middle of February. So Valentine's Day weekend, you got nothing to do, just watch some DrupalCon videos.
Or take that That's special really someone out to watch some DrupalCon videos.
Bottle of wine, big screen TV. DrupalCon videos.
Yes, but you have to spike your hair Dree style.
There you go.
Now, there's probably a lot of couples that would enjoy that, but you know, if your significant other is not in the Drupal world, then but there's a lot who are.
And Florida Drupal Camp coming up April 11th or 12th, and pretty much apparently every podcast between now and then will be a planning call for Florida Drupal Camp.
So if you have ideas. You can put yourself on the email list now, and when we open up registrations, we will send you an email. Right?
Is that working?
Absolutely. For everybody but you, Ted. I think we have you on our host file.
Yeah. Oh, man. Okay. I'm just adding it now to my host file. Okay.
Well, how about we move into where we can find all of us on the web? So, Tess, where can we find you on Twitter?
On Twitter, you can find me at SocketWench without the T in the last word. That's where I'm mostly hanging out.
Excellent. And you can find all of us at Drupal Easy. Myself is at Andrew M. Riley. Ryan, you're Liberator with the 2.0 spelling.
That's right. And if you missed my plug from last week, check out Bringing Art and Technology Together podcast. Plug, plug, plug.
Excellent. So Google that.
Yes. Or okay. Look at batideas.com, which is BATT.
That's crazy spelling. And Ted, you're Tedbo, right?
Yep. Tedbo at Tedbo and at 6 Mile Tech.
Excellent. And Mike, you're at Ultimike.
Yes, am I the only one who's confused by Tessa's comment about no T in wench?
I was going to say, isn't it without an R, but I don't know.
No T.
Is it an R? I need my second coffee.
No, the wrench. Everybody thinks it's wrench.
Okay. But there is a T and it's socket.
I need my second coffee rather badly right now.
So you said no T, but you meant no R.
I meant no R, yes. Oh, man. Again, is it... The revenge of the Drupal Easy podcast.
I'm like, is wench W-E-N-T-C-H? And this is the first time I'm hearing that. So. All right.
No, I think we should discuss the other 25 letters it isn't.
Let's open it all up to Unicode. Let's just bring it all in.
There you go. All right, 5 questions. Are you ready, Tess?
Yeah.
All right, quick. What is your current development environment? Hardware and software.
Okay, at work I'm using a MacBook Air 13 running macOS, but in my off time I actually use a MacBook Air 11 that's running Arch Linux.
Ooh. All right. And then how about your text editor, your code, code
editor? PHP Storm in each case.
All right. Name one person in the Drupal community we should be keeping an eye on.
I'm going to butcher his name probably, so he's going to make fun of me later. Jesus Manuel Olivas. He's actually the writer of Drupal Console. He's on the Drupal podcast, which is actually a podcast for in Spanish. So mm-hmm. It's excellent stuff there.
I'm sorry. Where would you like to see a future DrupalCon?
I would like to see it here in Minneapolis. It's a pretty city, and if you come here in May or in early October, it's not warm, it's not too cold. In October, it's really beautiful with all the leaves turning. And we've got public transport. It's a wonderful, wonderful place, but not many people know about it.
Yeah, I've heard, we've talked about it a bunch just because, Ryan, you've gone up there a bunch for Drupal events.
Well, and their Drupal camps are phenomenal.
I'd come.
We try.
All right. Okay, so if you could, where are we? If you could add one new feature to Drupal core with a snap of your fingers, what would it be?
Media module.
There you go. Better media handling. All right, you guys were messing with the questions here. Did I get all five? Oh, no, we missed one. Here we go. What is one aspect of Drupal that you'd like to learn more about?
DevOps. I'd like to know a lot more about how that actually integrates, because I'm only just starting to see a lot of that now that I actually work for Blink Reaction.
All right, very good. Andrew, you want to take us home here?
Yes, I do. We'll get in the car and drive down on I-95. So let's see. You can go to DrupalEasy.com/podcast to find our show notes or put in comments. But you can also find us in iTunes, Miro, or on Stitcher, or just about any other device that has podcast abilities. You can also search for us on Delicious. Just look for the Drupal Easy Podcast tag, and you'll find what we might be talking about. And we'll be leaving our upcoming podcast as a mystery. So you'll have to tune in for the next one to find out who our next guest is going to be. I'm Andrew Riley. This has been Drupal Easy Podcast number 144.
See ya!
Bye.